Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 280 of The Law Entrepreneur. And guess what? I'm your host once again, Neil Tyra. Today, my guest is Justin Stivers. Justin owns a law firm in Miami, Florida, appropriately titled The Probate Firm. And as the name suggests, they focus on probate administration with a little bit of estate planning built in as well. And it's an interesting journey of how Justin arrived at that niche of law practice to focus his firm on. And they are really one of the preeminent firms in the South Florida area who are providing the services in the probate administration space. We'll find when we talk to him that it's a little different marketing that aspect of a law practice than, say, estate planning, the planning part versus the administration part. I thought that was pretty interesting, something I hadn't really considered in the past. So I hope you get something out of listening to my friend, Justin Stivers. Justin Stivers, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Neil.
Well, it's a blast having you here, Justin. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Yeah, so I'm very excited to be here with you today. I appreciate the invitation. So I'm an attorney, obviously. I own a firm called The Probate Law Firm based out of Miami, Florida. And as the name would suggest, we do probate administration, estate planning, writing wills and trusts, and all that sort of stuff. And I've been practicing for several years now and fortunate, had some success and just growing onward and upward.
Awesome. Now, did you go straight into solo practice or small firm practice straight out of law school?
Yeah. So I my background's, I guess everyone thinks their background's a little unique. To back up a little bit, after undergrad, I was in the Peace Corps, lived in Honduras for a couple years. And then I think most lawyers will relate to this. I heard a voice, I don't know who it was, saying, hey, go to law school, you can do anything with it. And I have no clue where that's, come from. And in my experience, what you can do with a law degree is become a lawyer for the most part. So ended up going to University of Miami Law School, graduated. I was not the top of my class, but I did get a great job, actually personal injury at a personal injury firm. And kind of cool thing about how I got that job is I knew my grades alone were not going to get it. So I just looked up in the area personal injury law firms that were reputable, that had some of the highest settlements in the area. And I think there were about five of them. And I did five handwritten letters to them. And I got a call back from one of them, and they ended up hiring me as an attorney. Well, first as a law clerk and then as an attorney. So,
well, the handwritten letter is a nice touch. I like that.
Yeah, I think it definitely differentiated me. And so I worked there for a little while, knew personal injury just wasn't my cup of tea. And, so long story short, I was at another firm doing foreclosures. That firm filed for bankruptcy, let everybody go. And then shortly thereafter, I was like, okay, it's clearly not working me working for other people. So I'm just going to start my own thing.
Yeah. Well, it's a very similar story to mine. I did the exact same thing. Wasn't anywhere near the top of my class and worked for a small personal injury firm and then decided to go out on my own. So it's a very similar path. I mean, the motivation was you weren't getting what you needed from your previous experiences, but had you been an entrepreneur by nature, or did you view yourself as an entrepreneur by nature?
I think so. Yes. I think so. My father is in finance, financial advisor. Before that, he was in insurance and always kind of been independent. So I remember sitting around the coffee table. I have three sisters, the four of us and my mom stuffing envelopes on Friday night for direct mail pieces that he was sending out. That was very much in my blood for sure. And I can't tell you how
many attorneys I know that do direct mail who employ those kids of theirs.
Yeah.
it seems to be a rite of passage.
Yeah, I did. I definitely did. Actually, I was talking about today with my marketing guy. We're doing sponsoring an exhibit and doing a booth at a conference here soon. And we're putting together these pieces. And I'm like, well, I guess I can do it. I'm used to stuffing envelopes. Mm-hmm. So it was definitely in my blood. And then, I think I was always dabbling in different stuff. I mean, I've done sales, I've done, you know, just all different, so many different types of businesses that I've worked in since really 13, 14. And then when I started the firm, it was really, I had no plan. I didn't have money saved. It was just like, I think I can do this. And I just started it. So there was definitely that entrepreneurial spirit in me, but definitely going to law school, I never thought I'll start my own law firm. That was never a thought until, you know, later down the road after working at some of these firms that didn't work, when I just kind of said, hey, I think I can do this.
I love that. I think I'm going to open my own practice. Let me run and leap off this diving board. Then I'll look to see if there's any water in the 100%. Pool. You know, so when you started, did you start working from the kitchen table? Were you in a shared environment? Tell us about how you were physically set up when you started.
Yeah. So when I first started, I had basically it wasn't a shared space in like what people think of as like a Regis or multiple, mm-hmm. but it was a law firm that had several individual offices that they rented out. And so I started there. I don't even remember what it was, but it was a closet. It was basically a closet. And I just started from there. And it was just, you know, hustle, market, sell is what I say.
Yeah. Well, tell us about the hustle. How did you settle upon, or did you settle upon then as estate planning and probate as your practice area, or did you migrate to that? And if so, you know, how did you start hustling for those first handful of clients?
Yeah. So basically what happened after that firm that I was talking about, the bankruptcy firm that went under, I ended up partnering up with another guy and we were doing real estate, primarily real estate related defense work. And he was doing title work. From the title work, I was in contact with a lot of realtors who needed to sell a property, but it was owned by someone who passed away. So they had to go through the probate process. And as I kind of self-taught myself that, because, you know, unfortunately, when you're starting out, you, for better or for worse, take whatever you can, because you got to put food on the table. So I was just kind of teaching myself probate. And I saw a need, honestly. I saw a market, I saw an opportunity, I saw a way to, you know, probate is very emotional, obviously. Someone's just passed away. I thought that I kind of had that empathetic trait that would do well communicating with those clients, but I also had the business savvy to market to those clients and to generate business. So it just seemed like kind of a good fit. I like the idea of systematizing the work, kind of creating a factory, if you will, of probate, same with the estate planning. And so that's how, I mean, again, I just kind of fell into it. And then, you know, it ended up not working out with me and my partner, left on great terms, but it's just, we had kind of different visions. And so then I left and started what is now the probate law firm. And so when I started the firm, and I guess really it probably started a year before when I was with that partner, it was just going to every event. You know, now I know who my ideal referral sources are, who my ideal client is, what industries, what events, what types of things I need to be going to. But in the beginning, it was just like, I remember I had a rule that I would tell my business partner at the time, my law partner at the time, was if you go to the gas station, give your business card to the person next to you. Like, just talk to everybody, everybody that you can, hand out a business card. And that was really the strategy. And so
marketing approach is still alive and well, because I just went to the gas station. I told this on the episode a couple episodes ago. I just went to the gas station a couple weeks ago, and there tucked into the gas pump was an attorney's business card.
Yeah, it works, but there's better strategies.
Sure there is, but there are people still taking that approach.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, again, that's what I did because I didn't know where to find my ideal clients. So I was, you know, I did a lot of the traditional stuff. I was in a chamber of commerce. I was in different networking organizations. I joined all this stuff. I was involved in, you know, probably too many things that were not worth the payoff. The benefit of that is it did. And what I just either intuitively knew or maybe learned is I just kept all of those contacts, right? So I kept that database of people and just grew my network that way. But then I later learned, you know what, I could potentially go market to every roofer in town, and I might get a case here and there, but that doesn't mean it's like my best, you know, time to go spend with roofers. So I learned who my ideal referral sources are. And then I started positioning and marketing to those referral sources or where I thought my clients would be. But in the very beginning, yeah, it was just and you know, like most people, I would assume I didn't have a budget. You know, there was no budget. Right, it was a credit card. And it was, you know, how much comfort level do I have putting money on there that I don't have the money to pay back right now? So that's, you know, but then as I progressed, the marketing got a little bit more sophisticated, but in those early days, yeah, it was scary. It was just get out there, meet people.
So the name would imply that you gravitated to the probate part first and added estate planning afterwards. Is that correct? Or were you looking at both?
No, that's pretty correct. And that shift has been more recent. You know, the probate was I was very intentional that I wanted to be known for this one specific thing. I wanted to be known for probate and obviously the name. But, and so I would say over the past couple of years, I've been very intentional that like, that is what I am marketing for. However, as a byproduct, estate planning comes in because most people, yeah, attorneys included, don't really mark the distinction. They don't really know that probate occurs after somebody dies, whereas estate planning is wills and trusts before the person dies. So now we've kind of made a little bit of a shift where, frankly, probate's really hard to market for because you have to know when somebody died, who their heirs are, and if they have enough assets that makes sense. You know, I've been decently successful in that, whereas the estate planning, a little bit easier to market for because you can target, you know, I want to work with families with young couples that have, you know, young couples that have kids that have, right, a certain amount of net worth, all of that. So that's kind of been a more recent shift. But in the beginning, it was very probate.
I think it's really interesting juxtaposition of those two approaches because, as you said, the referral sources, the marketing areas are completely different. There is a little bit of an overlap, but generally speaking, they are different. So how do you market probate services?
That's a good question. That's a secret.
Giving away the secret sauce, I mean, in general.
I will say attorneys in general are still my top referral sources, probably, okay, like a lot of attorneys. So attorneys are definitely my top referral sources. So part of that is just networking with, and within those, I know certain types of attorneys are better than others, right? Right. So, you know, so then I find those, whether it be real estate, family, personal injury, whatever I, you know, is makes the most sense, we will target those referral sources. From there, it's a little bit harder, but like I was talking about with the real estate, well, that's how I got into it. So I know that realtors eventually are going to come across probate properties. So, you know, I put together a continuing education course called Probate 101 for Realtors that I teach, you know, all over to realtors. So there are ways. It's still challenging. It's not as challenging to market to referral sources because a lot of my probate does come from referral sources. It's harder to market directly to the consumer. So what we've done, so I would say right now for the probate, I'm probably at 60% of probates come referrals, 40% comes from the internet. And so the internet, what we've done is just like what a lot of people do, this is nothing secret. It's just putting out content. So we're just constantly putting out informative content on all social media platforms, writing blogs, writing articles, updating the website, putting videos on YouTube, all of that, just putting out content about, you know, what is probate? How long does it take? You know, who can be the representative, all that sort of stuff. And that's how we're marketing directly to the consumer.
Sure.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is brought to you by Center Stage and the Law Firm Marketing Minute, two great podcasts produced by Spotlight Branding. We're a legal marketing company providing content marketing for law firms that actually works. And we created these shows as a free resource to help lawyers like you learn more about marketing and business development. Every Monday, the Law Firm Marketing Minute arrives with a short 10-minute dose of marketing tips and inspiration to help you grow your firm. On Wednesdays, Center Stage arrives with perspective from other lawyers and legal industry experts to help you tackle marketing and other business development challenges. Check both of these shows out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and more. Both shows make great companions for the law entrepreneur, so subscribe today. Hope to see you there soon.
Now, if you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. And this episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight, the all-in-one contact relationship manager, or CRM. I've been using Daylight for well over 10 years now, and it's the best CRM for business on the Mac and iPhone. And despite having a case management platform that I'm very happy with, I still use Daylight to handle all of my many other law firm needs. When you're running your own law firm, it can be difficult to stay on top of follow-ups, keep track of details and communication, and stay aware of what needs to be done next on each project. Daylight organizes everything in one place, so you don't have to rely on your memory to keep it all straight. If you're feeling like it's time to upgrade from spreadsheets to a CRM, check out Daylight. You can download it from the App Store or visit www.marketcircle.com and try it free for 30 days. On top of that, you can get your first month free when you tell them you heard about Daylight here on The Law Entrepreneur. Daylight by Market Circle, staying top of mind without the stress. This episode is brought to you by Security Plus. Do you ever worry about ransomware, losing client data, or your employees getting phished? You know that 29% of law firms have suffered a data breach of some type or another? As a solo or small firm lawyer, getting hacked can make a crushing impact to the high integrity and reputation that you've spent a lifetime building. That's why I love Security Plus, and I'm excited to bring them on as a new sponsor. It's a turnkey cybersecurity solution built for solo and small firm lawyers like you, who often lack the clarity, time, and skills to protect themselves from cybersecurity threats. Security Plus protects your firm with 8 security solutions. And the best part is that it requires just 1 hour of your time to get everything up and running. So check out this new solution at securityplus.io/Neil, N-E-I-L. And that's securityplus.io/Neil, N-E-I-L. You can grab their security checklist as a freebie and lock in 10% discount for life. Again, that's securityplus.io/Neil. Not to sound morbid, but do you...
Funeral homes.
I was going to say, do you approach the funeral homes?
We do. And so that conference that I was talking about a couple minutes ago, that's what we're doing. I've had very limited success with funeral homes.
And that's, that has been my experience and those that I have spoken to as well. I was just wondering if it was any different down there in Florida.
They're a really odd group of people, generally speaking.
And I can accept that because I have family members who are in the business. So,
well, I say odd in the sense that, so when I sponsored something 2 years ago, and you know, there's a raffle, and the company next to me was raffling off a Lego set that was like a funeral procession. And I'm like, you know, what kid wants? it's a very interesting group. But you know what I think it is? This is, could be wrong, but in my attempt is, a lot of them there's either two types of funeral homes. One are small family mom and pops that are barely, you know, struggling to stay afloat. Yeah. And they're just not really, they're hesitant to send out their clients because they had a hard time getting those clients in the door to begin with. And maybe they're just leery of referral sources. And then the other interesting part about funeral homes is a lot of them, at least in Florida, are owned by huge companies that are publicly traded, even though they might have the mom and pop name on them. And so they're kind of hamstringed as far as what they can do as far as referrals. That could be way off, but that's just my kind of intuition.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been my experience that they're not really keen on even discussing it.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
You know, so which I find kind of surprising, because you can imagine that the topic comes up when they're working with the family who's just lost a loved one, and particularly if in part of that grieving process, the family divulges that they don't know what they're going to do. How are they going to handle, you know, the distribution of assets? It'd be a great opportunity for them to provide value to that family. But I find, in my experience, that they're not. So it's just kind of interesting. Now, on the other side of the coin, when you're marketing to folks about estate planning itself, like your content marketing, it's all about education, isn't it?
100%. Yep, absolutely.
You know, you have to provide that value to them. And so you're on all the platforms, you're on all the social media, you have a newsletter that goes out, you have a great website, you have your blog on your website, you link up with your YouTube channel. So you're doing all that. You're doing that all yourself, or have you outsourced the management of that process?
Yeah, so that's both. And that, I would say, is a trial and error. I think marketing is, if you're going to own your own business, if you're going to own your own law firm, you have to become a marketer, right? First and foremost.
To some degree, yeah.
Yep. You have to know how to market. And, you know, I've tried various things where I've outsourced certain things, didn't work out, I brought it back in, I've done all of the stuff myself, and maybe I should have outsourced it and not kept doing it myself. This is more recent, but in the past year, I have brought in a full-time marketing assistant. So I'm the brain behind it, and then I just spew it to him, and then he'll kind of direct things and make things happen. You know,
But you have a dedicated person
correct.
On staff correct. Who has that function rather correct. Than outsourcing it to another company or to virtual assistants or what have you.
Correct. Now, some stuff we still will outsource. So for example,
Because it makes sense.
Yeah. So we do a print newsletter. Every month we mail a print newsletter to about 2,500 contacts, referral sources, existing clients, past clients, prospective clients, that sort of stuff. And it's more cost effective. It's more time beneficial just to outsource that to a company who does it. At some point, you know, maybe it gets to a point we have the resources, but we outsource that. So there's some things, you know, that we will outsource, mm-hmm. but I think my opinion might change, but where I see a lot of people, this is nothing new, but people are always talking about social media. In my experience, outsourcing that is, I think, a mistake in some degrees. I think you want to, because it's hard for a company to really capture your voice talking about like your life and what you do. Maybe you outsource it for, you know, if you're just going to put a generic, what is a will or what to do if you've been arrested or, you know, that type of stuff. If you have them, if you're trying to build your brand and get your name across, I think you have to keep some of that for yourself.
Yeah. I think a happy medium there, and it's not for everybody, mm-hmm. but a happy medium is outsourcing the production and retaining the creation.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I can create a blog post that's personal to me that references my family, that shows pictures, has pictures of my kids, and then ship it off to somebody to polish up, to post it to the website, to, you know, incorporate it in the other social media channels. That's a division of labor that I think works for some people.
I agree with that. I mean, I don't need to be the one learning how to edit videos and put subtitle and all that crap right. on there. I outsource that. Absolutely.
Yeah. For sure. So let's talk then about, obviously, social media plays a role in the building of your firm. Let's talk about how you've grown and your staffing. I know that you have a crackerjack staff that you've assembled. Tell us a little bit about the trials and tribulations of staffing, because that always tends to be a number one complaint amongst business owners.
Yeah, and it's timely. I'm doing quarterly reviews today with my staff. Did a couple earlier today. Yes, I mean, staff is tough. Yeah. I don't think there's any way around it. However, I am fortunate right now. The team that I have is really solid. And so right now, just to give the listeners an idea, I have an associate attorney, I have two paralegals, I have a secretary, and I have a marketing assistant. So I have five full-time people, all in-house, all my W-2 employees. This firm I started about 3.5 years ago. So about 3.5 years ago, just me, to where we're at now.
That's pretty good growth.
Yeah, yeah.
Can't complain about that.
No, I think it's been good. But I've had, I could count, but off the top of my head, I don't know how many people I've had to hire and fire to get to this, what I consider is a pretty rock star team right now. I tried a bunch of different stuff. I've tried virtual assistants. I've tried, outsource phone answering services, all of that, which I think worked up to a point, but staffing is, is a challenge. And I think as I see different shifts in my firm, as I continue to grow, I become more aware of, listen, you're never going to just hire somebody that fits perfectly and does all of the things exactly the way you want them to do it all the time, right? But you can teach them how to do things and then allow them to grow into the skill sets that they want to grow.
Yep.
And that will help, grow your firm. And so that's over the past year, I would say, where I've spent a lot of more of my time is teaching, spending time with my employees to teach them how to do the things I want them to do, hold them accountable. And I think that's where I see a lot of people struggle is, they just manage by gut reaction, how they feel the person is doing on any given day. And I'm very number driven, very metrics driven. So, I try to set as many objective standards that I can for my staff. So it's not just, oh, hey, you're doing a crappy job. I can say, hey, what's going on? This is, you're not meeting this metric or whatever it is.
Well, so I think as employers, we have, me personally, this is my view. I think we have an obligation to teach, as you said, you just can't hope to hire the right person who crosses all the T's and dots all the I's and fits in, perfectly. People are going to have deficiencies. There's just, you can't find the perfect employee. When you do, you're really lucky. But so you have an obligation to teach and to instruct and to mold. And that's part of managing the human capital that I think we don't pay enough attention to as business owners, because it's far better to spend your time teaching and molding and holding them accountable, as you say, than churning through personnel. That's inefficient.
Oh, the turnover is terrible. And I was just kind of getting excited thinking about once you get your staff up to a point where they're running independently and not just blindly where you just say, hey, go do this. I'll check back with you in 30 days or whatever. But you're meeting with them regularly. I mean, it's a beautiful thing. I was telling one of my employees this morning, when I first started, I was coming in every Saturday, every Sunday. I very rarely have to come in on a Saturday or Sunday now. It's more so because I want to, or there's, it's a unique circumstance. And it's hard to do when you're by yourself. If you're the one answering the phones, if you're the one sending the engagement letters, if you're the one cranking out all the work, I mean, there's only so many hours in the day. And so I think once you can get to the point where you've got a team, it just makes all the difference. But that's a never ending thing. Your employee might quit, an employee might not work out. You grow, you lose staff. I mean, it's a never ending battle, but
right.
it's very worth it.
Well, and it's a balancing act. It's not a linear path. It's going to go up and it's going to go down, and it's going to be efficient on some days and less efficient on others, but you want the moving average to be going up, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell me then, what do you view as maybe the most challenging aspect of being a business owner?
Oh, I guess it depends on the day. I think it comes in stages, honestly. I don't think, because okay, the challenges that I have now are not the challenges that I had, you know, before when I first started. When you first start out, it's, I need to get a case or I'm not going to make it, right? And then, so now, fortunately, I'm not to the point where I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to be able to keep the lights on. The challenges are, how am I going to manage all of these employees? So I think I think that the challenges really are depend on the stage of growth or the stage at where you're at in your business. You know, for me, I think it's managing my expectations versus, you know, where I'm at now versus where I want to be, and not holding myself to the standard of where I see everybody else. And
it's hard to do.
Yeah, because I mean, you see, especially if, you know, I'm not in personal injury, but you see some of these personal injury guys, and I do a lot of work with them, and it's like, you know, they get a case and it's like, you know, $5 million to them. And I'm like, well, I don't have a probate worth $5 million or whatever it is. And it's, and so that's challenging. And I think so staying focused, you know, for a long term, because this is not you're not going to have a $10 million firm overnight whatever amount you think is, you know, big or what you want. And so I think you have to stay the course and just keep reflecting on what you do and keep growing.
And you can look at others for inspiration and aspirationally, you know, aspire to be like them, but beating yourself up because you're not, that's kind of counterproductive.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, is there a particular resource that was real helpful to you, a book or a coach or a training program or a website, something that you feel you got a lot of value out of that you'd like to share?
So there's so much out there, and I think that's a pro and con.
Part of the challenge, yeah.
I think that's, there's so much out there. And I will say I've always been a pretty big reader, but in my early stages, and even now, I mean, I devoured every business book you could possibly mention, right? I've probably, you know, read most of them. I mean, the classics, you know, Think and Grow Rich, mm-hmm. Power of Thinking Big, you know, How to Make Friends and Influence People, all that literature, I think is phenomenal. I think everybody should go through it. But I think at some point it's like it becomes the same after right. a while. But I do think if you're just starting out, you know, those classic business books are great. You know, some of the law firm specific stuff is phenomenal as well. I've been involved in a variety of coaching programs and mastermind groups and all of that. I think my opinion is you can find stuff that's legal specific, you know, law specific, but look outside the law as well and see mm-hmm. What other business groups are doing as well. And don't discount what you can get from those, even the cost. You know, some of the programs I've done are crazy expensive. And when at the time I didn't have the money, and it's hard to sitting back here thinking, but it's hard to say they were worth it or not. But for the most part, I think there's no price for learning more and stretching yourself, because again, you know, and I think, you know, the premise of this podcast is they don't teach us this stuff in law school. And so, you know, the stuff that I'm learning now and have learned over the past couple of years from these coaches, from business books, I read a lot of autobiographies as well, or biographies. I mean, that's probably more valuable than that education I got in law school, honestly.
Yeah. Well, it is important to continue being in learning mode. I find it difficult when I talk to attorneys or just non-attorneys, families and friends, where they say, yeah, I don't really have time to read, you know, or I don't like reading. I'm like, man, there's just every bit of knowledge that's available to the humankind is available through books. So
it's crazy.
I don't know how you can turn your back on that, but that's just me. Anyway, listen, Justin, this has been great. We could spend a lot more time here yakking, but I need to let you get back to doing what you do best. Tell our audience how they might reach out to you if they want to follow up on anything that you had to offer today.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Neil. Yeah, we've got a lot of, you know, free resources if you're an attorney and you just kind of want to take a look at what we're doing. We've got some resources on our website, super easy, just probatefirm.com. Or if you go to any of the social media platforms, you can either look up the probate law firm or just me, Justin Stivers.
And that's S-T-I-V-E-R-S for those of you who aren't in front of your computer.
I should spell that out. Yeah, it's not intuitive, I guess.
All right, Justin, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time to be with us today on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks, Neil. It was fun.
Well, how about that? That's a wrap for this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I'd like to thank our sponsors once again, as usual, Daylight by Market Circle, Spotlight Branding, Ruby, as in Ruby Receptionists, and our newest sponsor, Security Plus. If you have a chance, swing on by our website at www.lawentrepreneur.com. You can check out a bunch of information and resources there. And if that doesn't satisfy your needs, swing on by our Facebook page or Twitter page. You can find those just by simply searching for The Law Entrepreneur. And if you'd be so kind, I would greatly appreciate it if you go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and an honest review. If you find this podcast is helpful and that you're getting value out of it, it does help with our visibility and ensures that we're going to be there for another 5 years or so, as this has been quite the run. And I'm greatly appreciative of your interest in The Law Entrepreneur.